This is episode 79 of Our Modern Heritage, your resource for navigating your family culture. I'm your host, Jody Chathy. I'm so excited to share this episode with you. I had an awesome conversation with Kristen Hodson, and she's a licensed clinical social worker and a certified sex therapist. I want you to come into this episode with an open mind that our sexual health is not just something that we do. It's not something that's aside from our parenting. It's not something that is separate from our lives. It is something that is infused in everything that we do, everything we consume, everything that we talk about. It's everywhere. And so having a talk with our children is not something that we do just like once or twice. It is something that needs to be infused in everything that we do and in our conversations and in our actions with one another. And so that's what I got to talk about with Kristen, and it was a really awesome conversation. And she has really amazing resources and insights about our sexual health, and it's something that's gonna be really incredible. And so I hope you'll look into those things. So thank you so much for joining me here today. I know you're gonna enjoy this episode. All right, on the show today I have Kristen Hodson, and she is a licensed clinical social worker and an AASECT, Certified Sex Therapist. She is founder and executive director of the Healing Group Mental Health Clinic in Salt Lake City and co-author of the book Real Intimacy, A Couple's Guide for Genuine Healthy Sexuality. Additionally, she works as an adjunct professor teaching human sexuality to master level students working to become therapists. To further develop her passion around human sexuality, she delved in for over 3 years, exclusively studying human sexuality, learning from the best across the country. One of her favorite things to do is bridge things that don't seemingly go together, like sex and religion. In fact, she was once hired to speak at a Valentine's corporate event and was given these parameters. We will have bishops to people who swing in our audience. Make it work. And make it work, she did. She often asked us to speak in the community and religious groups because of this. That's awesome. Okay, she has a unique ability to break down the topics of sexuality into easily digestible pieces, empowering people to further develop their sexual identity, hone their sexual values, improve their communication around sexuality, all with the intention to improve people's relationships with themselves and others. Awesome. Welcome to the show, Kristen. I'm so excited to have you.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
So this is an interesting topic for me because, I mean, I grew up as a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and, you know, we preach no premarital sex, and that's what I did, you know. Both my husband and I had never actually been in relationships before we got married, before we met each other. And so we were both our first kiss and both everything, you know, and the idea of, you know, getting married and having sex was a little bit scary. But because our friendship, our relationship was so based on, you know, friendships, and we were just a natural fit. Not that that means that our intimacy was natural. It just means that we were able to have open communication about it.
Yeah.
So that's where, and then I started going to school to study health and health promotion. And one of my final courses, 400 level course, was supposed to be like health through the lifespan. And my professor, her whole agenda was actually like AIDS prevention. And she had a whole agenda throughout the course to actually teach like sex ed throughout the lifespan.
And that's so awesome.
I mean, it was really interesting because I was like, wait, isn't there more to our health than just our sexual development? But to her, it wasn't. Uh-huh. But I mean, you know, I learned everything about, you know, every form of contraception, every form of birth control, which I didn't know were two different things before. And so that's something that I was able to, like, now when people talk about sex and stuff, I'm like, yeah, I think I know just about everything. Not as much as you, obviously. But, you know, it's something that I'm at least comfortable to be able to talk about with people openly. And just sometimes I wish people were comfortable bringing up some of these more intimate topics so that we can more, you know, be able to talk about concerns or things like that. Mostly, I also want to be able to just have you on to talk to you about, you know, why it's so important to talk about sex and intimacy in our families, and why, you know, why it shouldn't be such this big taboo subject. So we'll go into that. But first, I want to just ask you, you know, what brought you into this subject? You know, what made you so passionate about this?
So it's interesting because when you asked me early on when I was going to school to become a therapist and to become a social worker, sexual health wasn't on my radar at all, actually. I had never... only formal sex ed I ever had was a maturation program that was wildly awkward in fifth grade. We learned about the reproductive anatomy with a video, and a mom was in the kitchen with her daughter and she poured pancakes of the reproductive system. And I just remember as a kid being like, that's so weird. And then I grew up and I don't remember anything in health or college, and none of my courses in my undergrad or grad led me to this. I actually started off in maternal mental health due to my own experiences of pregnancy and postpartum anxiety and OCD. And so I founded the healing group mental health clinic based on that to fulfill that need. Well, as you can imagine, a lot of these clients that were coming in also were having issues with their sexual health, because when you then, when you start talking about babies, how people are having babies, the impact babies have on relationships, infertility, all of these things impact sexuality.
Yeah.
I already had a it's like I already had a sign that made me comfortable talking about sex, but comfort talking about sex isn't the same as knowing a deep dive around issues around sexual health. And then I was approached to write a book. So the chicken came before the egg in this case, where I was asked to write a book. And after my sister and I wrote it and published it, I was like, I need to go get more training, because I already had a strong base. But then that's when I got really serious and pursued my extensive training as a sex therapist. And then brought that into my clinic. And to me, it became also a social justice issue that every single clinician is working with. Every single client is going to have a sexual history and a sexual story that's intersecting with their mental health, their relational health, their overall well-being, and feeling like every therapist should have a baseline competency, at least one course. So that's when that took me into academia to teach a course in human sexuality at the master's level, because it's not required. It's not required in majority of mental health programs. So, which is wild to me. So that's really why I became interested professionally. And it's one aspect of my job that it impacts me personally as well, that I am a clinician and an educator teaching about sexuality, and I'm also a human and a person in a partnership navigating sexuality, and I'm a parent helping my children navigate their sexuality. So it's not something that I can say I work with these people over here, but I'm not dealing with those issues. It's in my life professionally and personally.
So that's so interesting that it's not a required. Do they think that it's something that's too taboo or too personal? Like it's something that people kind of just grow into on a personal level, and it's not something that is directly impacts our health? Like it sounds like they think it's just secondary.
Yes, I think I think that's because of the larger cultural narrative we have around sexuality as a whole, that sex is something you do. It's not who we are, that it's a behavior. It's not like the U.S. just took out any language it had with the word sexual health out of anything. I'd have to go back and look, but they took this out of conversations relating to health, that sexual health isn't a thing. So I think that largely influences that learning about sex is a specialization and a niche, but not an integrated part of overall health and wellness. So it's not a requirement. It's an elective course for most places. And the other interesting thing is there's not title protection, meaning anyone in the state, with the exception of Florida, can declare that they're a sex therapist with no training or no certification, And so you can, a lot of consumers don't know this. So someone could be like, I'm comfortable talking about sex. I can be a sex therapist. And then they can advertise that. So I also like to educate consumers that when they're seeking out a sex therapist, to really understand what certification and credentials and training looks like. Because if you go on to like Psychology Today, you would think that there were 200 to 300 sex therapists in the state of Utah, which really there's only about 20 that have been formally trained to do that.
Do you think that that's because of the stigma around, you know, around sex and pornography and things like that? Is that they're trying to silence this discussion?
I don't think so. I really just think it's a lack of understanding of what sexuality and sexual health is, and that it's, again, it's not in a vacuum over here that we're living our lives and that sex is over here on the side, that it's integrated. So to what you spoke to earlier, health across the lifespan isn't just about sex, but it is a part of it. And it should be integrated in with healthy practices and relationship and all other aspects of taking care of a body, having a body, and the experiences we have with a body.
Wow. Well, I'm glad that you are out there as an advocate for all of this conversation and making sure and educating us about all of this. It's so important. And that's something that that reason why I wanted you here is so that we could talk more about this, because, you know, if it's so important to talk about sex and sexual health with our children, with our families, why are parents so reluctant to do it?
Well, because if we look at it, we all grew up in the same cultural soup of, it was very taboo. Our parents didn't talk to us about it. If they did, I think we're starting to break this idea of being given the talk, but most of us remember having this one talk that usually was around the age of 8 because it's like the age of accountability. And that's when we're going to impart the facts of life onto you. And that was kind of it. Or kids didn't get the talk. So they were given the messages that this is taboo. This is something you don't talk about. So that's at the family level. And then when we look culturally, we're an abstinence-based country by and large. So the messages that were sent is sex is not okay. It's not something you do. It's dangerous. It's dirty. It's can be wildly obsessive. And what's really fascinating is a culture where we are actually really a sex obsessed culture, but not in the right ways that promote health. And so I think by the suppressing of it over in one arena, we've created an over sexualization in another.
So it's almost like it creates more curiosity by the lack of discussion about it.
Yeah, because it's taboo and it's not normalized. And so I empathize with parents being reluctant, because developmentally that message was sent over and over and over again from a variety of angles and ways that this isn't something we talk about. And so our own experiences with sexuality, the shame we might have internalized, all the messages now impact how we're going to talk to our children. And unless we unpack that for ourselves, it's really hard to then be super eager to talk to our kids.
Mm-hmm. So what are ways, because that's what I hear you saying is that we need to like model for our kids, basically, the level of comfort that we have with talking about it, mm-hmm. and discussing it, bringing it up. You know, when we talk about modeling behaviors for our kids, obviously that looks good when you're talking about kindness and empathy, and you're talking about, you know, any other visible behavior. What are some of the like visible, observable, practical behaviors that parents can model for their kids?
Boundaries, mm-hmm. consent, respect, like the respectful communication, healthy touch. That's a big one that, again, all of these things have everything to do with sex and nothing to do with sex. Mm-hmm. So one of the things I help parents do is if they're not, there's probably an aspect of sexuality that they're not comfortable with that might be intercourse, but they're not broadening their definition of sex or sexual health to be like, oh, relationships is a part of that? Yes. Yeah. Boundaries is a part of that? Yes. Body image, healthy communication, media literacy, all of that is talking to our kids about sex. So when we include those into the conversations, we might all of a sudden be like, oh, I can talk to my kids about that. It's this one piece that I need to get more comfortable with, which is when it comes to intercourse or when my kids transition from just learning the facts about life to they're navigating their own romantic relationships and sexual expression. That's when it gets sticky for me. So I think it's helping parents broaden their definition and realize to start with the low-hanging fruit and to go, I can model healthy boundaries and consent. Like when we're doing tickling and my child says stop, but they really want me to keep going, I actually say, oh, you know what? If you say stop in our home, we stop. We don't, if you say stop, I'm not going to think that that means yes and keep tickling you. I'm going to stop. And then we honor the stop. That is wonderful modeling. And that's one of the many ways we can be talking with our kids about sex and modeling positive sexual messages in our home.
Yeah. And things like, if you don't want to give grandma a hug, you don't have to give grandma a hug.
That's a sticky one. Yep. It's amazing how that one's still so sticky. But yes, that's exactly right.
It makes sense. Or I just had to, my husband and I, we took our kids for a walk this morning, and our little 5-year-old, he was getting tired of holding the scooter. And my husband, like, went to kind of a joke, but he like took his scooter. And he's like, all right, now you owe me a favor. And I was like, right, honey, that's like grooming language.
Right.
And so, and it was like, but no, it's not. I scratch your back, you scratch my back. And I was like, for little ones, they don't get that though. And like, you're the adult and you're also the dad. Like, you can just do stuff because you love them, not because they like owe you. And he's like, you're right. Okay. I got you. You know, because that type of language is so common that we were like, he didn't think of anything on it. And I don't blame him at all, but
no,
you know, it's like, it's just kind of something that we do.
And I love that you mentioned that, because if we take that language and project that further, you see a lot of teens that feel obligated after they were taken out on a date and their date bought them dinner that they need to give some sort of physical way to say thank you. And
right.
There's a great book, Girls and Sex, that talks about that very thing of, well, I did this, now you owe me that. And if we teach our kids that, no, people can give free and clear and they don't owe you anything. And unless there's some sort of agreement and mutually decided exchange, I don't owe you anything. And that's, so that's so great. And you're right, your husband, that is part of our culture and has been. And so I like that you approached him as a compassionate spouse instead of critical, to be like, hey, let's think about this. Because really, as parents, we need to be that for each other, to challenge a lot of the messages that we were given, but now we need to challenge.
Yeah, because it's so common. And that's part of my whole platform, is like the different things that we see in our culture, like we just default to them because sometimes it's just normal. It's just,
that's right.
That's part of family culture. Part of culture in general is the norms, you know, what are the customs? And that's something that I'm trying to challenge through this platform, is like, just because it's a custom doesn't mean that it's right.
Yep,
that it's, that's okay. Right. And so we need to be able to talk about those things and challenge them and evaluate. And so I just told him that it was one of those red flag things. So that's what we talk about in our family, is like, okay, a red flag thing is if somebody tries to pull you aside to tell you a secret, or, you know, things like that. Like,
that's right.
We don't, you know, we try not to, you know, we talk about that stuff. And so I love that there's so many like nuanced things that it makes it easier to go, oh, I can talk about that. I can bring up these things. We can bring up those things. And like for our little family, we read the book Good Pictures, Bad Pictures. Mm-hmm. And it talks about the attraction center and how that's a good thing, because when you know, if you feel attraction towards something, somebody, then that's your attraction center activating. And we'll be watching a movie and somebody like even a cartoon, like Avatar, they blush or something when they get close mm-hmm. to you. And I'm like, oh, his attraction center is getting excited. Just uh-huh, like, you know, just because it's like, this is normal. Like, it's just something that everybody goes through, and it's part of their development. So
that's right.
I hope and that this is something that can be brought up more and more with our kids. So then what can parents do if they want to go deeper into, you know, sexual health? What are some of the main topics that they can talk about? Or what do you think are the most important things to start talking about or approaching that subject?
Well, I think some of those things I said, we really don't want the places parents can get trapped is talking about all the ways that sex can be harmful, because that can feel easier to talk about what is scary about sex or how it can harm you. So it can be easier to maybe to talk about sexual abuse or pornography or all of these other things. And those are not the first conversations we want to be having with our kids. We want to have this culture of sex positivity where we can talk about good touch and we can talk about healthy relationships and honestly, developmentally, the first building block of a healthy relationship is healthy friendship, which then can lead to healthy relationship and then healthy dating, and then it all builds on each other. But really what parents need to do is, what I see is developmentally, most people in the U.S. have the knowledge of about a fourth grade level when it comes to sexuality. The reason for this is again, we didn't get sex ed growing up. We've just figured it out and come to our own conclusions. We think that sex... So when I went through my training and certification, at the very beginning of it, I thought, well, I'm just going to go through this program and it's just going to tell me everything I already know. It's just going to validate everything I know, but I've got to go through it. That wasn't the case at all. The more that I went through it, and after my 3 years, I left learning how much I didn't know, and that this is a lifetime of learning when it comes to sexuality. In my master's level course, I think the book I'm at now is the 14th edition, that they're reissuing it almost every year because it changes so much. And the average amount of hours parents get in the U.S., kids get 17.2 hours of sexual health information between kindergarten and 12th grade. So compare that to reading and math. And we would never expect our kids to be literate or proficient at either of those with 17.2 hours over their whole life. Yeah. And so as parents, we need to up our sexual health knowledge and education, and we need to go back and educate ourselves and to give ourselves permission to not know. Like, a lot of people can feel like, I should know this, or I'm an adult having sex, so now I know, because I'm having sex and I like it, now I know what there is to know. When you used a really important word, that this is nuance, this is complex, it's so much more than a behavior. Kids learning that their body is theirs and that they have a right to say no without apology is so important. And as a little kid, that means sharing, asking their friends if they can give them a hug. And there's all these little things that then that message can be expanded on as they age. So what parents can do is increase their own education. That the challenge I always give is, if the national average is 17.2 hours of sexual health information, make that number higher in your home. Mm-hmm. Make sure your kids have 30 hours or 50 hours. And that's not formal education. I'm not an advocate of these one impart all knowledge conversations, because our kids don't absorb. We are telling our kids over and over the same things over and over and over. So it's a million 1 minute talks. Some have to be more formal. Some need to be longer. But that's what I think parents need to do, is they need to learn skills on how to talk to their kids. They need to learn what is developmentally normal and age appropriate. And they need to understand what their values are.
So do you think that, so their values, that's, is that where the root of the problem really is like?
It's a good question.
Because, you know, what are the deeply rooted values that people have that keeps them from, you know, is it because they have their own past experience of, you know, their own baggage of having negative experiences, so they feel like they need to warn their kids or protect or shelter their kids?
Absolutely. I mean, a lot of people that's something I did in my book and something I do with my students is to have people write their sexual history and their sexual autobiography, because all of us have these experiences and rarely have we had an opportunity to share them with anyone, and we can feel shame about them. So the way in which we either choose to have conversations or avoid conversations can be largely influenced from our own history, that certain aspects of sexuality get activated in us and make us really reactive and emotional. So we either come at the conversation with a really heavy hand and like, don't, or no, or that's bad, or we avoid it altogether.
Yeah.
I had one parent reach out and say, I'm not going to talk to my teen about oral sex because I didn't have anyone talk to me about it and I seem to figure it out. And I think kids need to be able to figure these things out on their own. That was largely influenced by their own experience, not necessarily based on what is shown to be best practice when it comes to talking to our kids about sex and what they really need to help them navigate it. But values also is how do we feel about all these different sexual issues and what's our North Star? So what comes up a lot, particularly with parents that are religious, is masturbation. Well, how you feel about masturbation, your value around that is largely going to influence then what you teach your child. And I have so many different questions for parents to evaluate their values so that they can have a North Star and be more aware of what it is we're teaching our kids. What are the messages we're sending them? What do we want them to know? What are the values? Do we value waiting until marriage to have sex? Do we value that boys and girls both get similar messages, or do we move and treat our girls one way and our boys another way? There's even a question of how do we feel about our kids getting their ears pierced? Should they be at an age where they can choose to do that with their body? And parents will say, how is piercing their ears have anything to do with sexuality and values? And it's like, well, because it's their body and consent. And there's no right or wrong answer. It's what are you going to do? And as parents walk through these value statements that I do in my course, they find that they actually feel differently than their spouse, which then means they're not on the same page. And so then the parents need to have a discussion on, we feel very differently, so what do we want our shared value to be on this, so that we don't give our kids mixed messages? So that's another reason why parents can get really hung up on talking to their kids about sex, that it can largely feel like it's everything around sex is in conflict with their values. And so we're having more of a value conflict than problems with sex. I don't want to talk about oral sex because that's not in line with my values. I don't want to talk about sex before marriage because it's not in line with my values. It's usually rooted in value conflict.
It almost sounds counterintuitive. I would think that if you want to talk to your, like, if premarital sex is part of your values, I don't know, that to me that sounds counterintuitive.
I think that
would be something that I would want my kids to be so educated about, it that that's their conscious choice.
Yes. And if that is the value that is taught, then we need to provide our kids the skills to navigate situations to uphold that value. It's not enough just to be like, we don't have sex in this home, but I'm not going to provide you any information to navigate hormones and emotions and social complexities and social pressures. That's what we have to arm our kids with, is skills to navigate these situations, because when you're in the heat of a moment and you love somebody, that's great that your parents value that. But if that's it, it's going to be really tricky.
Yeah. So what did you mean by, can you explain more about North Star? What did you mean by that? Like how did
just
people...
I call it the guiding star, that is what guides the, what we teach our children. What I mean is it's kind of our internal compass, that if we can identify our five values, so safety is a big value in my family, and that trumps. So if I value my kids waiting until marriage to have sex, that's one of my values, and safety is another. These are what guide my discussions with my kids, of helping shape my conversations. And but what happens is, let's say I've got a teenager and I value them waiting till they're married, but I actually value safety more. That may mean that I'm going to have to talk with them also about ways to prevent pregnancy, ways to prevent STIs. And for a lot of parents, they're like, I don't want to have that conversation, because if they're upholding our values, they're not going to be in that position. And, or if we have these conversations, I'm going to give them ideas and they're going to believe that I'm giving them permission to do these things. Mm-hmm. And the research actually shows the opposite. The more information we give our kids, the more likely they are to delay their first sexual experiences and intercourse.
I also see this as an opportunity that you, like your value, if your value safety above, you know, waiting until marriage. Also, what about valuing like vulnerability in the relationship? Maybe even so, like with your child, you know what mm-hmm. I mean? If your child does come to you and says, if say they do have premarital sex or other things that maybe go against some of your other values, how do parents navigate that if their top value is not, you know, is waiting until marriage? So to me, I just think if your child does approach you, they violated one of your values, what do you do? Do you, you know, put your, for me, I would say I'd want to put the relationship with my child first. You know, if they come to me and they say, you know, if they tell me, I feel ashamed because I broke this value, what should parents do?
I love that you asked this, because you speak to that in your home and your family culture is the relationship with child supersedes actually everything. That if they were to break this other value, at least what I'm hearing is I still want them to be able to approach me. And for me, then that would mean if that's my value of that relationship first and foremost with my child, means I then need to respond with love and stay connected and help them navigate that. That trumps everything. This shows up with LGBT kids, mm-hmm. that some parents may have a particular value as it relates to LGBT issues, but then these parents say, but above anything, my child is always loved and always accepted. And that is so important. Because again, the research as far as that shows is parents accepting their child is the greatest safety measure they can give to their children. That they, suicide goes down, everything, if they're just accepted by their parents. So I actually love that you bring that up as a value of acceptance and vulnerability for parents as a part of the culture. I really love that.
Well, I just think it's so important. I mean, especially after the conversation that I had a couple weeks ago with another LCSW, that she and I were talking about how, you know, that we need to be in the process of what it takes to raise our children. That yeah. when we get so hung up on a result that we want, you know, the result is this value of no premarital sex, right? But along that journey of raising our children, there's going to be a lot of things that come into play that you just can't anticipate. But if you're willing to be open and talk about those things, embrace the process of raising your kids, growing, you know, or whatever their sexual story is, you know, if they are LGBTQ, things like that, whatever it is that they are encountering growing up, then to be open to be able to talk about those things. And that is like the best way to guide your family culture and to guide the direction, I guess, to just love them and not be so results oriented that you're going, well, you just disrupted that result that I was holding out for.
Exactly.
So you're out. You know, it's like, wait, but they're still your child. They're still, you know, if your kid doesn't get straight A's through high school, but your result that you're hinging your relationship on was that they got straight A's and they went to the best college. What are you doing? What is the point of raising that child?
You know, right.
I mean, that was kind of harsh, but you know what I mean?
Like, I know what you mean.
There's so much more to raising your child than saying, I want you to check off all the right boxes and grow up to be what I, you know, the result that I'm hinging our relationship on. Because like even people in the church will say things like, our relationship is hinged on whether or not you stay true to the church or things like that.
And that's right.
Like, then you're bound to just drive them away. It's almost like a self-fulfilling prophecy that at some point they are almost going to, you're setting them up for failure and to disappoint you.
Right.
Right.
Because one of their jobs as they're developing is to establish their own identity and their own autonomy. Yeah. And one of the ways they can do that is rebel against the outcomes you have for them and the agenda you have for them. And I like this. It couldn't be more true. And when it comes to sexuality, I think it's a really hard place to be vulnerable and to be willing to go there with our kids and to have those hard conversations. But our kids really need us and want us. Kids, and I know I keep going to the research, but it just, we can have a lot of beliefs of what we think, but it shows time and time again that even if kids have access to sex ed in school, they still want their parents. They want to hear from their parents. They want to know how their parents navigated these things. They want that. And so responding to our children in a way that shows we're glad they asked and we're glad they came and approached us is so important. And we cannot control how they're going to develop. We cannot control their choices, but we can control how we respond and how we're going to show up and be present with our kids. And so doing our own work around our sexual stuff and our sexual muck allows us to be present and vulnerable with our kids, because we can see them for who they are and not a reflection of our stuff or make their journey about us.
Yeah, I love that. Thank you so much, Kristen. I think we could go on and on and on.
We just could.
I know. But I just, this is like just being able to talk about these things and being able to express that, you know, that we just need to love our kids and work on our own, you know, do our own inner work of what our, you know, developing our story, writing it out. I like that idea of writing out our story of our sex journey and things like that, and becoming comfortable with our own, whatever it is that we're dealing with. I mean, I think sometimes the reason why it's so hard to talk about is because we're experiencing our own kind of shame somewhere along our sex journey. And so for parents to just resolve their own issues, that I think is top priority.
Agreed.
What are some resources that you recommend, or your resources that you can tell us about? Tell us more about. One more question first. Wait.
Yeah.
I want to ask you one more question. Two more questions that I had sent
you.
So what can parents do to safeguard their children from abuse and unwanted sexual encounters?
One of the biggest things is talking with our kids about sex and teaching them the anatomically correct names for their body parts.
Because, well, that drives me crazy when people don't.
Yeah. Well, when I was first married, though, and we had our first baby, my husband was like, we're not going to like really call it a penis. Sorry. I'm like, but that's what it is. It's a penis. And he's like, but isn't that weird to have a little kid use that word? And again, that was part of his upbringing.
Yeah.
But what happens is when our kids use the anatomical correct terms, two things. One, if they are in a situation where there's the potential or possibility for abuse, if they use those correct terms, that person knows that they are talking to someone about sex. They've had to learn those words from an adult figure who is having conversations. So they're not a good candidate, unfortunately. Yeah. Unfortunately.
Yes.
The other piece is if they are abused, being able to say those words and to describe that they were touched, their vulva was touched or their penis was touched, that's critical. Yeah. And so that's one of the ways, and then to teach our kids the difference between good touch and bad touch. And again, that gets more nuanced as our kids get older. But starting with these fundamentals, that's how.
I love that. And then the other question that I wanted to ask was, how can we prepare our children against the damaging effects of pornography?
So that's actually a course that I'm working on right now, and I'm loving this content. Again, if we're just focusing on pornography and not teaching them about sexual health and sexuality and making pornography a part of that question, we're really missing the mark. And so one of the ways that we prevent is to have these conversations, to help them to have a definition of what pornography is in our home. People at first, they'll just pick, oh, it's just pictures. Is it? Or what about this? Because all of this is sending your kids messages around sexuality. So it's having a definition. It's arming them with skills. It's getting the scripts and leading these conversations. I think you've caught me at a time when I've just been spending hours on this. So to give you a concise answer, when I'm like, this could be an 8-hour course just on this. I'm not super articulate in it because I'm eyeballs deep in it. Uh-huh. But there is, in terms of resources, I guess I'll plug this, that I have my course of Yes, You Can Talk to Your Kids About Sex that was just launched as an online course. And then May 18th, I'm doing my course called Exposed, which is helping parents navigate sexually explicit media, like how to, the pitfalls of that with their children. That's sold out, but there's a wait list, and I'm encouraging people to get on the wait list because those will be the first people that are offered it when I run it again.
Right.
I just posted something on Instagram today. Again, I go so deep into these things that sometimes I'm like, how do I take it and break this down at the beginning point for parents? And but the biggest takeaway that I just shared is that there was a study that was looking at tween media consumption, like what they consumed and the sexual messages that were like what the message, how much sexual material or messages were in the medium. So magazines,
yeah,
TV, internet, and most people are just focusing on the internet. That's it.
Right.
That actually, where they're consuming, like looking at what tweens are looking at, that they were only getting 6% of their sexual messages from internet. They were getting twice as much with TV and magazines. The highest place that they are consuming sexual messages about bodies, behaviors, relationships, consent, is music. 40%. Wow. It's like quadruple. And so if we are not including that and changing our definition from pornography to sexually explicit media, mm-hmm. we're focusing on this one thing when our kids are putting in their ears,
yeah,
message. And my husband and I started looking at all these lyrics of Beyonce, Taylor Swift. Why can't I think of
Mariana Grande? I'm sure.
Oh, there's so many, and being like, that's what they're hearing. That's mm-hmm. this is influencing their attitudes and behaviors and thoughts. So this course, even I've in my work, I've spent hundreds of hours in the realm of pornography. That's been a big piece of it, and I still, as I've been preparing for this course, I'm like, oh my gosh, there's so much more than people realize.
It's culture. It's like a porn culture.
Yeah, it is. It totally is. Yeah. And what was interesting is that marketers, I was reading another thing that marketers know that parents are uncomfortable talking to their kids, so they will. they know the parents have conflicts in talking to them and teaching them. So they make it available for kids because their parents don't. And so then they can hook them in to buy.
That's scary.
Yeah. So teaching our kids to be critical consumers and, anyway, this course, I'm so excited for it. It's going to be so good. So this just goes back to parents needing to educate themselves and to take these courses and to read the books. One of my favorite books is For Goodness Sex, Love It by Al Vernacchio. Another book is Who Has What by Robi Harris, and it's not The Stork. And when I recommend resources, a lot of parents will say, well, are these approved by this church or that church? Are they Christian-based? Are they LDS-based? And it's impossible to find one book that perfectly reflects the values in your home. So I encourage parents to read the book, take out a page or don't read this page, but to make it what you need for your home. But don't throw out the entire resource because you don't like one piece of it. Just remove that piece. And I tell people to have more books on sexual health in their home than they do cookbooks. That if they only have one book, let's up that. Or Pinterest recipes. So on my Instagram account, I have one of my highlights that shows a lot of the books and resources that I really like. And so that's another place where people could go.
Okay. And that, let's see, I have it open right here. It's Instagram is at Kristen B. Hodson. And I love your account on here. It's so informative. And so you're so personal and
thanks.
Go on and see your account and I love it. And there's I actually do go on and I'll see people on Facebook or things. I'll ask you a question and I'll be like, I'll actually refer them to some of your particular posts and things like that.
Oh, cool. Thank you.
This one's a really good post. Cause it's really, you're really good at being open and expressing all the different questions that people might be asking about sex and about sexual health and things. And so it's like, you have a question, go to Kristen's Instagram and she's got an answer.
Thank you. Thanks. I'm so glad. That's the point of it, is to be helpful.
It is. I love it. Awesome. Tell us where we can find your URL, where we can find your course.
Just kristenbhodson.com. Okay.
So thank you so much for sharing your thoughts, so much for your work. I just really appreciate that you are being an advocate for more conversation around all this, especially when things like sexual health is being taken out of some curriculum and things like that. Sounds backward. So thank you for your work and thank you for being willing to be here on my podcast. And
thank
and
you.
And this is so important to family culture because it's like you said, it's really is like all encompassing. It's really something that is like parallel to everything that we're doing in our life.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so it's so important to be able to have these conversations. So thank you so much, Kristen.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you all for listening. This has been so awesome. I really love listening to Kristen. I love following her on Instagram and the awesome insights that she creates and, you know, the impact that she's putting out there. I'm going to be starting something new here, starting on June 7th. That's a Friday. I'm going to start hosting a weekly live meet and greet type of sessions where we can come together and have a discussion about the previous podcast episode or any of the principles or core values or things that we talk about on the podcast, because this is really, I want it to be something that is truly a source for helping you navigate your family culture and ways to think of strategies and, you know, your mission statements and your values and your vision for your family and ways that we can maintain our family culture. If you'd like to be part of those discussion groups, then come and join me. You need to sign up on my list at homeandfamilyculture.com, and I will have a link somewhere on there where you can join me on these weekly discussion calls. And if you're already on my list, you will get the link. Please like and rate and share and comment and come join this conversation about our family culture. And remember that Mother Teresa once said that if you want to change the world, go home and love your family.